This is Paula Kaufman, continuing reading of the Decatur Herald and News for July 26, 2016. We'll continue our reading with the death notices. Mary E. Davis, 99 of Sullivan, formerly of Decatur, died on July 23, 2016, at Mason Point in Sullivan. Services to celebrate her life will be 1 p.m. Tuesday, July 26, 2016, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be for 1 hour prior to the services. Burial will be Boiling Springs Cemetery. James Davis Jr., 90, Jim, of Seminole, Florida, formerly of Decatur, died on July 19, 2016. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, July 30th, 12 noon at the First Baptist Church of Pinellas Park, 5495 Park Boulevard, Pinellas Park, Florida. Interment will be on Monday, August 1st, 10 a.m. at Bay Pines National Cemetery. Funerals pending for Tuesday, July 26, 2016. Daryl Dean Beasley, 78, Monticello, died Friday, July 22, 2016. Calvert Belange Bruce Funeral Home, Mansfield. Willie Bubba Cook of Decatur died Monday, July 25, 2016, Walker Funeral Service and Chapel. Rodney J. Hildebrands of Lincoln died Friday, July 22, 2016, Peasley Funeral Home, Lincoln. Funerals today for Tuesday, July 26, 2016. Andy Armour, 86, Flora, noon, in Frank and Bright Funeral Home, Flora. Marcella M. Marcy Best, 55, Vandalia, 8 p.m., in Miller Funeral Home, Vandalia. Willoughby Camfield, 84, Shelbyville, 2:30 p.m., in Lockhart Green Funeral Home, Shelbyville. Glenn William Bill Hunter, 75, Shelbyville, formerly of Findlay, 10 a.m. in Howe and Yockey Funeral Home, Shelbyville. L. Pauline Lawrence, 93, Arcola, 10:30 a.m. in Walnut Grove Christian Church, Arcola. Cecilia Marquis, 65, Decatur, 10 a.m. in Graceland Cemetery. Continuing the obituaries, Catherine R. Harvard, 53, passed away on Friday, July 22, 2016. A memorial gathering will take place at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church, 1540 Illinois Route 140, Greenville, Illinois, 62246, at noon on Wednesday, July 27, 2016. She'll be laid to rest in Green Hill Cemetery, Van Buren'sburg, Illinois, with a private graveside funeral service. Voice double Marnie Nixon dies of cancer. Randall Lee Molby, Lovington. Randy Lee Molby, 59, of Lovington, passed away 4:20 a.m. Sunday, July 24, 2016, at St. Mary's Hospital, Decatur. No memorial services will be held. Shelley Elaine Mills. Shelley Elaine Carroll Mills, 65, of Decatur, passed away July 22, 2016, at 11:45 in her home. A private memorial will be attended by her family and very close friends at her home to celebrate. What's happening today? Events, etc. Art Talk Tuesday, Hand Embroidery, 3 to 4:30 p.m. at the Flourishes Gallery and Studios in Shelbyville. Decatur Park District Star War Camps, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Pogue Arts and Recreation Center. Family Story Time, 6:30 to 7:15, Decatur Public Library Children's Department. St. Louis You Pick Apart Lucas Oil Late Models, 7 p.m., Macon Speedway. Sleepy Time Tales Evening Story Time, 6:30, Mount Zion District Library. Storm Preparedness Program, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., Decatur Public Library, Madden Auditorium. Exhibits. Blue Connection, Decatur. the large-scale paintings of Emma Morrison. Decatur Public Library, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Recovering the Classics, Millikan Student Work. The Artwork of Sharon Zimmerman. Gallery 510, Arts Guild, Decatur. The Photography of Doug Bergeron. Madden Arts Center, Decatur, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. in the Ann Lloyd Gallery, International Arts Experience, Cuba. Perkinson Arts Center, Kirkland Fine Arts Center at Millikan University, noon to 5 p.m. Rock Springs Nature Center, Decatur, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., North Gallery, watercolor artist Sue Watts, South Gallery, David Staff, Nature Photography. Nightlife, DJ Hillbilly's American Party Boys, 4 to 10 p.m. at the Bottoms Up Bar and Grill. Health, A1C test, cholesterol, triglycerides, blood sugar, and PSA screening, $20 to $35, total lipid panel, fasting required. Shingles vaccine, recommended for ages 60 and older, 8:30 to 10:30 a.m., Brown's Drugstore, Effingham. Blood drive, 3 to 6 p.m., Knights of Columbus Hall, Decatur. Blood pressure and blood screenings, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., Jasper County Senior Center, Newton. Having a baby, 6:30 p.m., St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital Auditorium. Pre-registration is required. Tuesday night park run, 6 p.m., Fairview Park Pavilion, $1. Registration starts at 5:30 p.m. Tzedaka Christian Health Center Clinic, 6 to 9 p.m., Central United Methodist Church, Decatur. Meetings. Decatur Chamber Toastmasters, noon to 1 p.m., Greater Decatur Chamber Meeting Room. DPL Nonfiction Book Club, 1 p.m., Decatur Public Library Boardroom. Selection is Mary's Mosaic, The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pitchett Meyer and Their Vision for World Peace, by Peter Janney. Noon Kiwanis, noon, Decatur Club. Noon Toastmasters, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Decatur Toastmasters. Support groups. Al-Anon, 7 p.m., First Congregational Church of Christ, Decatur. Babysitting available. Al-Anon, 7:30 p.m., Auditorium, Taylorville Memorial Hospital. Alcoholics Anonymous, Back to Basics, 7 p.m., Central United Methodist Church, Decatur. Alcoholics Anonymous, Beginners Group, 8 p.m., First Congregational United Church of Christ, Decatur. Closed meeting with discussion, non-smoking. Alcoholics Anonymous, Road to Recovery, noon to 1 p.m., St. John's Episcopal Church, Decatur. Open discussion meeting. Baby Talk Time, 6:30 p.m., Children's Auditorium, Decatur Public Library. Narcotics Anonymous, 7 p.m., St. Thomas Catholic Church, Decatur. TOPS, Take Off Pound Sensibly, 7:30 a.m., Fellowship Hall, Second Church of God, Decatur. TOPS, Take Off Pound Sensibly, 5:30 p.m., Room 307, Main Street Church of the Living God, in Decatur. How to Feed a Family of Four for Less Than $7, by Daniel Nieman of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Feeding your family a good meal is easy. Just go to the grocery store and empty your pocketbook. But what if you aren't so flush? What if your wallet is looking a little lean? What if times are hard and money is short? Everybody has to eat, right? And it's better to eat good food than bad. So I decided to cook some delicious and even elegant meals to feed a family of four for less than $7. It is not difficult to do. All it takes is a bit of imagination. Imagination and an inexpensive protein. No steak or lobster for these meals. Even ground beef and chicken have become so expensive that they can no longer be relied upon for a cheap meal. If you're looking to stretch your budget, you'll need to stick with the essentials, beans, eggs, and pasta. First, the ground rules. I bought my food at Shop and Save, which, as the name implies, has prices that are generally lower than other local markets. Aldi is also a good bet for high-quality, lower-cost foods. In determining the price of each meal, I took into account only the cost of the amount of the food that I used and put the rest aside for future use. My 25.4-ounce bottle of olive oil cost $5.99, so 2 tablespoons of oil was about 23 cents. 1 tablespoon of butter, at $3.50 per pound, cost 11 cents. 12 large eggs cost me $2.09. You can find them at least 20 cents cheaper elsewhere in town. So 6 of them was $1.05. In addition, I also kept items that most or many people would ordinarily have in their pantry. No foie gras, no weird spices, no truffle-infused honey. I did buy some items on sale, but only if I needed them for my recipes. I did not alter the recipes to use sale items. And I counted the actual cost of everything I used, but only the amount I used. All of the dishes were surprisingly good, but the one that surprised me the most was one I created myself. I call it sausage, beans, and polenta. I used the cheapest sausage I could find, a smoked turkey sausage, and spinach. It takes a bit of work to make, but that's why it tastes so good. First, you have to soak the beans overnight and then make the polenta, if you make it right, almost like a risotto. It is impossibly smooth and creamy. It is so creamy, you'll think there is cream in it, or at least cheese. Nope. Just cornmeal, water, and salt, and a quick smear of butter when it's done. Then you have to chill the polenta for at least 2 hours to get it stiff enough to fry. Trust me on this. You'll want to pan fry the polenta. Don't bother with oil. It only needs a little bit of butter. Then you make a nice garlicky sauce for the beans. Add the sausage and spinach and serve it with a wedge or two of polenta. It is sheer hearty bliss. And it only costs $5.72 for 4 servings. Recipe: sausage, beans, and polenta. Yield: 4 servings. Ingredients: 1 cup of dried beans, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1 cup of yellow cornmeal, 2 tablespoons of butter divided, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1/2 cup of chopped onion, 3 cloves of garlic crushed, 1 10.5-ounce can of chicken broth, 1 cup of spinach, packed, about 2 ounces, rinsed and dried, 14 ounces of sausage, see note. Note: I used the cheapest sausage I could find, which was a smoked turkey sausage. Most link sausages will work for this recipe. 1. The night before the meal, soak the beans in enough water to cover by 1 or 2 inches. You can skip this step if using canned beans, but they will be slightly more expensive. 2. At least 3 hours before the meal, or the night before, prepare the polenta. Add the salt to 2 cups of water and bring to a boil. Have another pot with at least 4 cups of water boiling nearby. Slowly sprinkle cornmeal into the salted water, stirring constantly. Stir in a couple of tablespoons of the boiling water and lower the temperature to a very low simmer. 3. Stir frequently and add the boiling water, a tablespoon or 2 at a time, whenever the polenta starts to become stiff and dry. Cook until tender, about 45 minutes to an hour. Stir in 1 tablespoon of the butter until well mixed. Pour into a well-greased skillet or wide bowl to a depth of 1 to 1.5 inches and smooth the top. When cool, cover with plastic wrap and place the skillet or bowl in the refrigerator for at least 2 hours or overnight to allow the polenta to set. 4. When ready to make the meal, cook the beans according to the directions on the package. Drain. This step can be eliminated if using canned beans. 5. Heat the oil in a large skillet over medium-high heat and add the onions. Sauté until translucent, about 3 to 5 minutes. Add the crushed garlic cloves and cook until fragrant, about 1 minute. Pour in the chicken broth, bring to a boil, and simmer until reduced by half. 6. Stir in the spinach and cook until just wilted, about 1 to 2 minutes. Add the beans and cook until warmed through. 7. Cut the sausage into 1-inch slices. If raw, cook according to directions, drain, and add to the beans. If cooked, Add directly to the beans and heat until sausage is warm. Taste and add salt if necessary. Set the bean mixture aside and keep warm. 8. Slice polenta into 8 wedges, removing each from the skillet or bowl. Melt the remaining 1 tablespoon of butter in a large skillet. When very hot, add the polenta wedges so there's at least some room between each wedge. Do this in batches if you do not have a very large skillet. Cook wedges without stirring until they start to brown on the bottom. Flip and cook until brown on the other side. Serve 2 wedges per portion, surrounded by the mixture of sausage and beef. The Dear Annie column by Annie Lane. Tenant suspects neighbors of helping themselves to her mail. Dear Annie, I live in a large apartment building in a very safe part of town. It's an older building, and all of the mail for the complex is in one room. Large packages are placed by the mailbox in that room rather than brought up 4 flights of stairs. A few weeks ago, I purchased a couple of expensive kitchen gadgets online and was waiting excitedly for them to arrive. As the order said 5 to 7 business days, the more than 2 weeks I'd been waiting seemed wrong. I work from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., so I knew that the package would arrive while I was at work. However, I checked for it every day before and after work just in case. Nothing. After tracking the package online, I saw that my order had arrived 3 days earlier, but it had gone missing. I told the apartment manager, and he said there wasn't any video surveillance. The best I could do would be to put up signs asking for info or saying that the package had been mistakenly picked up and to have it delivered to me or the apartment manager. I can be refunded for the kitchenware through the online retailer, but Annie, how do I deal with neighbors stealing my stuff? I don't feel as safe in this apartment now, even though I've been living here for more than 4 years. Signed, sealed, delivered, and. Stolen, dear Stolen. If you want to feel safer around your neighbors, get to know them. It's harder to steal a Ginsu knife from someone you know, and who may be in your kitchen one day, than from a stranger who is merely a name on a packing slip. Consider planning a barbecue or movie night for the complex. You'll make friends, and the other people in your building will recognize you as an active member in your community. In the meantime, to ease your mind, have your packages delivered to the post office for you to pick up or delivered to you at work. Dear Annie, I had my first child when I was still a teenager, and we've always been exceptionally close as mother and daughter. When my daughter had her own children in her mid-20s, I was still young enough to be mistaken for their mom. I've enjoyed fun and close relationships with my grandsons and my granddaughter. However, I just found out that my 14-year-old granddaughter Emma has been in therapy for the past few months because she was cutting herself. She's been acting out since my daughter and her husband got divorced last year. I heard one of my grandsons talking about Emma's sessions and asked my daughter what was going on. I've done some research online about cutting, and I know that Emma's health should be our main focus. But I'm hurt. I'm hurt that no one told me about this sooner. I've always been there for my family and would think my family members would turn to me when things get hard. Confuse Nana. Dear Nana, your daughter is acting purely on instinct, a mama bear in survival mode. She hasn't been thinking about anyone but her little cub. The most important thing is getting your granddaughter help. It sounds as if she's on that path. Your family didn't mean to hurt you by leaving you out. Try to remember what it's like to be in the trenches of parenthood with a young daughter. It's easy to get tunnel vision when in such a crisis. Set your emotions aside and just be there for your family, as you're already doing. Sexism is Business at Fox by Froma Harrop, syndicated columnist. What to make of Gretchen Carlson's suit against Fox News chairman Roger Ailes, alleging sexual harassment? If Ailes did demand sex as a condition of her employment, and Carlson can prove it, then she'd seem to have a good case. But other complaints about inappropriate behavior at Fox News don't sit quite right. So she was mocked on the air over her high hemlines and paid slithering compliments about looking good today. On the air, a male co-host pulled down her arm to shut her up. I mean, what ballpark did she think she was playing in? With a few exceptions, the Fox News sets purposely pair men in business attire with women in sleeveless short dresses, some featuring adorable peekaboo cutouts revealing cleavage. You don't need a fashion anthropologist to tell you that this dress code screams inferior status. I hit upon Fox and Friends on Saturday morning when the discussion centered on the Dallas tragedy. There was Abby Huntsman, all arms and legs in a flamingo pink dress, flanked by two male anchors encased in conservative business suits with ties. Huntsman was offering the smartest commentary, but how many viewers took notice? It's not just Fox News Channel. All over TV, you see women doing news dressed for the cover of Cosmo. The need to play the babe is why so many newswomen get yanked off the air the moment they age. Carlson herself is now 50. It's especially painful to watch one of the survivors, Andrea Mitchell at 69, displaying arms and legs alongside fully dressed men with lesser intellects. It does not matter that she's in terrific shape. Carlson sat on the Fox and Friends set for years as an accomplice. She soldiered through the lame sexist joshing. She once stomped off the set in seeming complaint, but came back, saying she was kidding. Her recent book praised and thanked Ailes with profusion. Now, we can say this is entertainment. She was hired to perform as the ditzy foil to the men. The formula includes a revolt against politically correct feminism. Whatever. In the age of hipster androgyny, the female hoochie-coochie on Fox News Channel seems increasingly dated. It may account in part for CNN's narrowing the ratings gap with the once-dominant Fox News, particularly among young viewers. The fashion industry has been in on promoting retrograde aesthetics for working women. Decades ago, there was a brief dress for success movement, urging women to wear suits in professional settings. But the notion of women getting by with a work wardrobe of five business uniforms, as men do, could not be tolerated. Women in suits with those floppy bow ties were quickly made fun of. The message was, you can flaunt your femininity at the office and be powerful at the same time. That women in well-tailored suits are actually quite alluring, check out the Hitchcock movie heroines, got lost in the demands of selling fast fashion. Some may argue that enduring fraternity-level taunts was the only way some of these women could get on camera, become famous, and make good money. That may be so, and I won't begrudge their trading dignity for fame and fortune, if that's their wish and they don't pretend otherwise. The main problem with Carlson's suit is the timing. It was filed only after the network decided to not renew her contract. While gainfully employed, she helped advance a business model that championed overt sexism. And that's why the sisterhood probably isn't losing a lot of sleep over Carlson's case, even as it quietly hopes she prevails. How does the homestead exemption work? By John Roska, The Law Q&A. Q. I want to know how the homestead exemption works if I sell my house. I have a judgment against me for $5,000. My wife and I expect to clear $25,000 when we sell our house and pay off the mortgage. Do we have to pay the $5,000 judgment? Or can we protect the sale proceeds using that exemption? Can we hold the sale proceeds for a while before buying another house? A. For a married couple, the homestead exemption protects up to $30,000 from the sale of your residence, safe from creditors for a year. If those sale proceeds are reinvested in another residence within a year, you'll have a $30,000 homestead exemption in that new residence. Exemption laws protect a basic core of things from creditors. They're designed to save debtors from complete destitution by preventing creditors from taking everything. Most importantly, exemption laws protect $4,000 worth of personal property, including money and bank accounts, and $15,000 of equity in a residence. Spouses can combine each individual chunk of the homestead exemption into a total exemption of $30,000. You don't really need the protections that exemptions provide until there's a judgment against you. Pre-judgment, a creditor has a claim that you owe money. Post-judgment, they have a proven debt, which the law lets them enforce by seizing money and property that's not exempt from collection. A married couple's homestead exemption stops a creditor with a judgment from touching the first $30,000 of net proceeds, from the sale of a homestead. If you and your spouse net only $25,000 from the sale of your residence, the whole $25,000 is exempt. The creditor with the $5,000 judgment can't touch it. It doesn't matter if the creditor has recorded their judgment as a lien against your real estate. A judgment lien can only attach to equity value that's not exempt. When all your equity is exempt, then the lien attaches to nothing and the creditor gets nothing. The law specifically says that proceeds from the sale of a homestead shall be exempt from judgment or other process for 1 year after the receipt thereof. That lets you park your $25,000 in net proceeds in a bank account or stash them under your mattress for a year. If that money wasn't used to buy a new residence, whatever's left after a year isn't exempt anymore. The creditor with the $5,000 judgment against you could then have a judge order you to turn over the now exempt remainder. Commingling exempt and non-exempt funds can make everything non-exempt. To avoid losing the exemption protection, keep those exempt funds in a separate account and keep records to prove they started out as exempt. If one spouse dies, the surviving spouse can continue to claim their deceased spouse's $15,000 homestead exemption so long as he or she continues to occupy the homestead. That lets the surviving spouse continue to claim a combined $30,000 as their homestead exemption. One case even says the right to claim a deceased spouse's share is not lost on remarriage, as long as the now remarried widow remains in the same residence. Benefits of home care. All those with aging parents know the dilemma of deciding on the best care for them. You weigh the possibility of a nursing home, wonder about how to choose the best one, think about bringing in a professional caregiver or doing the job yourself. You want what is best for mom and dad. Perhaps you have heard the saying, not deciding is a decision, meaning that if you put off deciding, you are really deciding to stay with what you have. In this case, that may not be bad. How simple home modifications can enable aging in place. First, evaluate the physical and medical needs of mom and dad. Is their home a safe environment? Can it be made safe for them with a few home improvements? Consider Margie's case. Margie's son Tom realized that his mom still wasn't ready for the care facility she had helped choose and that she might never be ready. But some new cupboards in the kitchen that were low enough for her to reach made her kitchen accessible to her shortened stature. Then a ramp to replace the back steps made it easy for her to get in and out of the house with her walker. Tom realized that Margie's medical needs were not extensive, and even though she is on oxygen. If her medical needs get worse, a care facility may be necessary, but for now, Margie is happiest in the familiar surroundings of her own cottage. How in-home care is cost-efficient. Because Tom and his wife work, they decided to hire someone to come in 4 days to help 4 hours a day to help Margie. She has two different ladies who help her, and she's become friends with them, even though she's resisted the idea of a stranger coming into her home. Tom and his wife take care of his mom on Sundays. This is much more economical for them than paying for a residential care facility. A room in an assisted living community costs $43,200 per year on average, whereas if Tom decides 8 hours a day of home health care is needed, it would run about $8,300. With the average hourly rate of $20 an hour, non-medical home health care can cost about one-third of what a nursing home costs, especially if you're only paying for a handful of hours per week. Because Tom decided on home health care, he's respecting Margie's independence and dignity. He can personalize the care to Margie's changing needs so she has exactly what she needs. Home care keeps Tom's family together as they routinely check on Margie, take her on outings, and touch base with caregivers. The care Margie gets is safe since Tom looks into any complaints immediately. This is Paula Kaufman, reading the Decatur Herald and Review for July 26, 2016, and some additional materials. I hope you enjoyed today's reading, and I look forward to reading with you again.